LTCIPC program implementation. An effective IPC program uses a wide variety of implementation strategies. A few of the most common implementation approaches are described in Exhibit 3-3. The ability to produce documentation of implementation activities, including their results and corrective actions taken when indicated, is critically important in creating an active and effective program to support a safe, resident-centered care environment. Exhibit 3-3, LTCIPC Program Checklist. Copyright 2013 Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology, Inc. Permission granted to reuse and slash or modify for individual use in a work and slash or educational setting. Duplication, distribution, publication, or other use for profit or other commercial purposes without prior written permission from APIC is prohibited. Note that the CDC National Healthcare Safety Network, NHSN, is a surveillance system developed and maintained by the CDC. Participation in NHSN is currently voluntary for LTC facilities, with the exception of COVID-19 reporting, which is required by CMS. However, surveillance systems and public reporting requirements are changing in the LTC community. Data validation in LTC facilities is another area currently being investigated by the CDC. Here are a few important points about an LTC facility's IPC program to take from this checklist. The IPC program needs to be a written plan, and this plan needs to be based on appropriate guidance documents that are clearly denoted and easily accessible. The program is customized to the LTC facility's specific priorities using the risk assessments. The IPC program includes or references related policies/procedures. It also sets priorities for surveillance and should specify what types of education/training will be provided and when. Training may be needed for all of the IP plan categories listed at the end of the above checklist, but some training requirements may need to be prioritized over others. The program also includes product reviews for cleaning and disinfecting products, resident care equipment, PPE, etc. IPC program requirements vary considerably from state to state. Thus, healthcare leaders and legal counsel should consult their own state's regulations. Some states allow considerable latitude in procedures, providing little guidance. Other states set forth explicit requirements for infection prevention procedures, for example, dictating use of particular methods of sterilization. Note that the ability of the IPC program to influence practices that affect safe resident care depends on certain characteristics of the resident population, residents' risk of infection, and characteristics of the organization and personnel. These characteristics include the number of beds, professional school affiliation, geography, the volume of resident encounters, resident population served, clinical focus, number of employees, and administrative philosophy. It is important to understand these characteristics when developing a program to optimally meet the infection prevention needs of the organization and the residents it serves. Implementation of IPC plan through policy and procedure. The IPC program influences practice through direct actions. For example, policies and procedures, review and evaluation of products, and observations. In addition, training and educating HCP can help them develop the skills and knowledge necessary for improving resident care. When considering policies and procedures, the IP must understand that creating written policies and procedures, and requiring adherence to them, has legal ramifications. Policies and procedures should also be systematically reviewed and updated as needed. Legal importance of policy and procedure adherence. Policies and procedures are important for legal reasons because failure to follow them could constitute a breach of duty, which is defined as a deviation from the recognized standard of care. While the laws of various nations differ, generally if a resident wishes to recover damages from a negligent act, the plaintiff may need to establish that a duty existed, that a breach of duty occurred, and that this breach of duty caused an actual injury. Because of how difficult it is to establish that a particular act or omission specifically resulted in infection, residents are rarely awarded damages for HAIs. Nevertheless, mounting a legal defense is very costly. Key point: legal liability is not established merely because a resident develops an infection. Because HAIs are an understood potential complication, unpredictable, and sometimes difficult to prevent, courts have recognized that such infections may occur despite reasonable care. Healthcare providers and facilities have a legal duty to care for their residents. Healthcare providers must exercise a degree of care and skill that could reasonably be expected from a normal, prudent practitioner. And they also have an ethical obligation to act in the resident's best interests. Similarly, healthcare facilities have an obligation to provide a safe environment to protect residents from harm during the course of receiving care. They have a duty not only to establish necessary systems and protocols to promote resident safety, but also to take reasonable steps to ensure that the HCP comply with systems, protocols, policies, and procedures. In the context of HAIs, what constitutes reasonable practices and protocols may change during an outbreak, particularly as IPC measures may need to be revised to reflect new evidence about disease virulence, transmission routes, and key control methods. IPC is dominated by guidelines and directives, and failure to comply with recommended practices is one factor that may indicate a failure to meet an appropriate standard of care. In many areas of practice, courts often look to guidelines or standards of practice to help determine the legal standard of care. Ultimately, complex legal issues that arise should be escalated to the facility's legal representatives for assistance. Policies and procedures overview. Policies are overarching guidelines that govern the day-to-day actions of HCP, that is, what they must do or avoid doing and when specific policies apply. Policies tend to change infrequently and usually have some degree of flexibility. Procedures are detailed process steps for accomplishing a task. The steps themselves and their required sequence are specified. Procedures have less flexibility but may change more frequently, in light of evidence of a more effective method. Policies and procedures represent the structural tools that help promote correct and consistent IPC practices. IPC policies and procedures may be configured in a variety of ways. They may exist as a separate manual or as individual documents within a department policy manual, or they may be integrated into the context of specific policies throughout the facility. In large healthcare organizations, some or all policies may be provided through the corporate office. For healthcare facilities that are part of a healthcare system, policies may be developed by an IDT for implementation within participating facilities. Each facility will still need to customize these policies to their specific needs. In smaller facilities, the IP may be primarily responsible for developing and updating these documents. Policies and procedures should be based on current national standards. National standards are those that are promulgated by reputable, recognized IPC agencies or bodies such as the CDC, SHE, APIC, and WHO. IPC policies and procedures must include development and implementation of a system of surveillance to identify infectious or communicable diseases. A process for reporting incidents of communicable diseases. A system that ensures that HCP with communicable diseases are prohibited from direct contact with residents or their food if direct contact will transmit disease. IPC committees are typically responsible for setting IPC policy and procedure at healthcare facilities that have such a committee. Regardless of whether a facility has an IPC committee, the IP is still responsible for bringing as many stakeholders as possible to the table to ensure that policies are both evidence-based and likely to be accepted because each department has been consulted. The title of infection preventionist is relatively new. It reflects the change made by APIC from the former title of infection control practitioner, in part because the new title more accurately describes the broader array of responsibilities that fall to the IP, including the responsibility to implement policies and procedures that reduce or prevent HAIs. IPs must ensure that the facility develops clear policies and systems to control and prevent the spread of infection from HCP to resident, and vice versa, and to the community. Policies and procedures must be developed using the most current scientific evidence or, when such evidence is lacking, from best practice guidelines and expert consensus documents. Healthcare facility policies and procedures related to IPC can be based on requirements directly provided by a government agency or accreditation body, requirements based on analysis of research studies. By identifying relevant quality studies, the IP may translate findings into real-world practice. Recommendations from voluntary advisory groups, example, CDC, APIC. Policies and procedures handed down from a higher organizational level, example, hospital affiliation. For example, TJC releases an annual list of national resident safety goals, NPSGs, that healthcare organizations must meet in order to maintain accreditation status. Because an NPSG addresses the organization's obligation to establish processes, policies, and procedures to protect residents from infections, institutions that fail to establish proper procedures and techniques for IPC are potentially liable when an adverse outcome related to an HAI occurs. Two IPC-related NPSGs include compliance with the HH guidelines and managing identified cases of unexpected death or major permanent loss of function associated with HAIs as a sentinel event. Written IPC policies often relate to staff and resident care practices, construction and renovation, emergency management, occupational health, and sterilization and disinfection. General policies are applicable to all HCP within the facility. These policies may form the basis of an IPC manual. Specific policies may also be developed for each unit or area. It is imperative that all policies and procedures be clearly and comprehensively documented. In addition to staff compliance with IPC practices, organizations should establish clear, useful internal practice manuals that are readily available to all staff members, in electronic format, for example. Incomplete or inaccurate documentation can open an organization or individual up to a whole host of legal troubles. It is best practice to develop a list of the specific guidance and other resources used to develop each policy or procedure. This information will be useful should an organization need to mount a legal defense, and it can also help auditors from relevant agencies, such as those from CMS, assess facility compliance with policy and procedure. Providers of direct resident care must implement these policies consistently to benefit residents and protect staff. Policies and procedures should be reviewed at least annually and revised when needed, example, when services or products change. Documentation must reflect an ongoing review process by the facility, and documentation of the review process is routinely inspected during facility surveys. Although the availability of current policies is important, their correct and consistent use by staff is also required. In addition, ongoing training must be provided and monitored to ensure optimum compliance with procedures implemented. Implementation through training, product evaluation, and surveillance. Educational programs are the mainstay of improving infection prevention practices. Teaching personnel to increase their IPC knowledge and skills is an important method to influence quality resident care and protect HCP. Education can be delivered many ways. If online education is used, the IP should verify that the content is delivered by a provider qualified to offer accurate and relevant material. The use of newsletters, journals, in-service programs, local conferences, and webinars has enhanced the ability of facility-based IPs to encourage broader educational participation. Documentation of attendance at educational programs and of evaluations or post-tests, when used, should be included with program records. Education targeting knowledge must be balanced with skills enhancement. Some facilities may offer skills workshops or invite specific vendors to provide demonstrations and practice sessions on site. Simulation-based training remains rare in LTC facilities, but is increasing in popularity in academic medical centers. One-to-one coaching or mentoring is more common, but it lacks the consistency and reliability of more formal methods. When procedures are changed or new products or equipment are introduced, all healthcare personnel who use them must receive adequate instruction with documented competency evaluation. Failure to ensure that healthcare providers correctly perform resident care procedures, especially the use of lancets and injection supplies, has led to serious infections in LTC facilities. Product evaluations help implement the priorities in a risk review by ensuring that products are used in the manner in which they were intended to be used, including their cleaning and disinfection. This subject is addressed more elsewhere. Process surveillance is also vital. The LTC facility should continuously evaluate how staff use aseptic technique and follow infection prevention procedures. The LTC facility should monitor with consistency through direct observation of staff performance to validate proper compliance. The role of prevention. Prevention programs have a place in infectious diseases. Acute infections with the potential for community spread, such as measles, rubella, or other childhood diseases, are addressed elsewhere. Infections that may become chronic, such as TB, are prevented by limiting exposure to those who are contagious and by treatment of those who have the active disease. Prevention of HAIs requires intensive staff education. Decisions about prevention will depend in part on how far a given disease has progressed and what interventions can be made. Ideally, primary prevention should be carried out. For example, health and wellness programs, immunizations, but this may not be practical or possible. Prevention strategies are wide-ranging and depend on the disease in question and the information available to the practitioner. Primary prevention strategies for reducing the risk of transmission, including SP and TBP, HCP and resident immunizations, and cleaning, sterilization, and disinfection, are designed to prevent the disease from occurring. Forecasting may be used to improve an outbreak response, predict trends, and inform decision-making. Programs and other training, such as the use of SP and TBP to prevent transmission of BBP or the use of appropriate barriers, masking, negative pressure rooms, etc., to prevent TB transmission, may prevent occupational and environmental health exposures. HAI prevention also requires an understanding of how chronic diseases and underlying conditions, for example, immunosuppression or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, can increase the risk of contracting HAIs. Translating evidence into practice. Even when new evidence-based research findings are available, barriers exist to translating those findings into practice. This can result in gaps between research evidence and clinical practice. The IP may, therefore, need to interpret the evidence that such studies yield so it can be effectively translated into clinical practice. Implementation science is defined as methods used to promote the use of evidence-based practices to improve healthcare quality. This involves translating clinical research findings and evidence-based practices into routine care processes to improve resident care and health outcomes. Translational research is interdisciplinary. It requires expertise in multiple areas such as basic science, clinical practice, IPC, and epidemiology. It also involves multiple skill sets, including the ability to differentiate between study designs, evaluate the statistical results, identify the interventions with the greatest benefits, communicate the findings, coordinate processes to facilitate the adoption of relevant findings, determine barriers to successful implementation, and innovate approaches for removing barriers. The basic process follows these steps. First, determine the health application of study results. Second, apply evidence-based guidelines to the interventions being considered in order to assess their effectiveness and efficiency. Third, develop and implement policies, procedures, or safety culture changes to bring the study results into health practice. And fourth, assess the population impact and close the loop by evaluating the real-world health outcomes of the evidence-based guidelines at the population level. After identifying evidence-based findings that they want to incorporate into their facility's practices and processes, via their literature review, for example, the IP needs to draw on a number of implementation strategies that can be applied to their IPC program. Incorporate new practices. Institute a pilot program to test out newly discovered processes and practices before rolling them out across the facility. Example, use of a new fluorescent marker to assess cleaning and disinfection practices. Evaluation. Conduct audits and feedback sessions for any pilot programs or other process tests in order to discover whether the new practices are appropriate or whether they need to be tailored to the facility and staff's existing processes and responsibilities. Education. As with many aspects of IPC, incorporating new findings into staff education and training programs is a strong strategy for disseminating evidence-based information to those who are in a position to put it into practice. In performance improvement and implementation science, infection prevention competencies for current and future role development, Marilyn Hanchett states that implementation science differs from QAPI in several key ways, which are summarized in Exhibit 3-4. Exhibit 3-4, QAPI versus implementation science. Source, Marilyn Hanchett, Performance Improvement and Implementation Science. Infection Prevention Competencies for Current and Future Role Development, American Journal of Infection Control 40, 2012, 304-8. Dissemination of IPC information and disclosures of harm or exposure. Feedback from the monitoring and auditing of IPC metrics and resident care standards should be provided to relevant stakeholders. This communication may be accomplished through routine written, including electronically, or verbal reports to clinicians, committees, and department heads. It is important to provide appropriate information to medical staff and administration as well as frontline HCP. Key point, Dissemination of IPC information is a crucial component of an IPC program. Surveillance data and policy decisions should be communicated to all stakeholders within the organization. If a resident has been harmed or exposed to risk of harm, providers are duty-bound or required by regulation or accreditation requirements to disclose that information to the resident or family. This is true whether the condition is the result of negligence of a physician, other personnel, or the healthcare organization. When errors have occurred, or when some risk of harm exists, national, regional, and local laws guide disclosure of identifiable resident health information to regulatory authorities, accrediting bodies, or other government agencies. Use of IPC records in lawsuits. Plaintiff's attorneys may become interested in the proceedings, records, and reports of IPC committees. Accordingly, the protection of residents' confidentiality, names of personnel involved in facility infection surveillance, and the IPC reports themselves have become controversial issues in terms of the legal discovery of these reports. Courts have sought to balance the desire of IPC personnel to maintain confidentiality with plaintiffs' need for information to support their allegations. In response to court decisions that have found that IPC program records are discoverable, legal statutes exist and they vary by jurisdiction to protect such records.